It's hour number two, Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. I'm Connor sitting in for Mitch. He'll be back next week. He is enjoying his time off. You know what he does. A lot of tanning, a lot of twittering, and I'm not sure what else. Care to speculate? Gallo? Francis? No? He's not here. You can say whatever you want.
He's not here. What is he doing? He's doing some cardiovascular.
Maybe
work.
He's getting his driver's license.
That's not happening.
No, there's no way. Absolutely not. That will never happen. It's too late for him. All right. So it is hour number two. So you heard Francis. You heard Gallo. We've got Felicia Perillo in studio helping us out as well. And we're all with you until 7 o'clock today. We've got a lot of help from our friends, including our next guest from the NHL on TSN, Aaron Ward. How you doing, Aaron?
Fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for making time for us here today. Tons of stuff that I want to get to here with you. For starters, Ken Hitchcock extended in St. Louis. And I know the news really sort of broke yesterday. This is something that you were talking about on Twitter. I know that you heard back from some fans of various teams. What's your take on the one-year extension for starters?
I think that it's 1 year, so it's not in any way, shape, or form any type of certainty for him. No, I mean, it's not that hard to rid yourself of a coach halfway through a contract when you're not married to him for more than, was it going to be 10 months of a season? So it's not an endorsement of Ken Hitchcock. I think it's a stay of execution, honestly, is the one-year contract. I find it easy to believe that Armstrong, in retrospect, looks at this and says, okay, here are the coaching candidates available to us. The moment I get rid of Ken Hitchcock, likely he'll end up somewhere like New Jersey, San Jose. I mean, obviously San Jose took care of their circumstance today, but are they better off with Ken Hitchcock because of the continuity and not having to upset the apple cart? Yes. I think that St. Louis has to take a serious look at themselves and start determining what they need. And I know that based on what I thought was going to be a sarcastic, fun tweet about getting a goalie and keeping him on the team and not making him assistant general manager, didn't go over very well in St. Louis. They do have to address the goaltending issue, and I think secondarily they have to add a little speed. But I would tell you that I'm assuming they'll get a little bit of a shot in the arm if Vladimir Sobotka decides his stay in the KHL is a poor decision.
Underrated player there, and yeah, things are weird in the KHL, so maybe they can get him back. But when it comes to the guys in the room, and St. Louis somewhat deservedly has this tag of perennial underachievers, what effect, if any, does it have if you meet with adversity, if things get bad for whatever reason, or if the coach's message starts to become stale? Does the fact that the coach only has this one-year deal, is it in the back of the players' minds at all?
No. As much as it's a one-year deal, it's the same as the question after Mike Babcock signs for the gross national product of some countries. I don't think players take that into account. They have their jobs. The coaches have theirs. I don't think there's anything a player can do to sway or dissuade a team from keeping or getting rid of a coach. I think the performance overall as a team can't be manipulated by a couple players deciding that, the guy's only here for 1 year, so therefore, since he has no real true endorsement, we don't have to play for him. Everybody's professional at this stage. And I think, from my perspective, not being a GM, I agree with the way they handled this, in the way that you've got a team that's got a very short window right now. The players are getting older. You have a lot still in this locker room, and you're just about a step away. And to then bring in a new coach with no guarantees that he harnesses the team and gets them headed in the right direction, I think it's smart to stay the course for right now. But with a clear, established message to Hitchcock that he's on a short leash, and that the results have to be there early on in the season.
Aaron, we've seen an incredible amount of coaching changes in the NHL over the last 3 or 4 years. You certainly get the sense that owners and GMs, mostly owners, are becoming more and more impatient. That said, coaches, they do have their guaranteed contract. So I guess what I'm asking is, are coaches less powerful than ever because owners are so willing to pull the trigger, or are they more powerful because they're starting to get paid more?
I think they're more powerful because everybody's signing them to term. And, I mean, there's no benefit for Dan Bylsma 2 years ago to come into the workforce and do anything else because he's going to get paid over the extent of his contract. And coaches are signing big money for longer term. And as much as obviously they'd like to get back into the fray and get involved and keep their name relevant and their presence known, these guys now have the ability to based on their term in dollars, affect the decision. I mean, I'll take, for instance, Boston. I mean, Peter Chiarelli, I don't think it's a hidden fact that Cam Neely is not a fan of Cole Julian. It's a given. So Peter Chiarelli's gone because, honestly, I don't think Peter Chiarelli wanted to get rid of Cole Julian. Now that Sweeney's there, they're under an evaluation period. So when you say that there's coaches and a lot of moves, there's no guarantee that Cole Julian is still there. I think Cole Julian is a fantastic coach. I think that they've had to deal with a lot of uncertainty in terms of the personnel in the lineup with some major injuries. I think that whether you throw it on Chiarelli or not, overall, the Boston Bruins have to change the times and get a little faster. I don't know if that's a matter of just trying to rely more upon some of the younger guys you have in the organization. But still, I think that coaches still have a great amount of influence over the market right now.
You brought up Boston, and this just sort of reminded me. I'd love to hear if you do have anything to add to this, but do you know or what's your understanding of who made the call to trade Tyler Seguin from Boston to Dallas, which is looked at now as one of the reasons why Chiarelli doesn't work for the Bruins anymore? But was it just Chiarelli? Was it ownership? Was it Cam Neely? Do you know?
Well, there was a excerpt put out there. I think Messam had one of those. Just saw the Montreal Canadiens have it. What was it called? CH or
24/7,
whatever that show is.
Yeah.
Do you know the name of it? 24/CH. Well, Boston has something similar to Messam. And at some point, one of the scouts or one of the management staff, in the process of evaluating talent, absolutely teed off on Tyler Seguin about his lack of maturity, the uncertainty as to whether or not this kid's going to ever get it. It was crazy. Like, it was an absolute sewer job by a guy, and I was in shock. But honestly, since stepping out of the player ranks and into media and now being exposed to how players are talked about, how they're considered, it is honestly a meat market. And you are a commodity that's traded just like any other in this world, and these guys get torn down and built back up. And in Seguin's situation, it was a scouting staff that evaluated the big picture. I mean, whether it be Tyler Seguin and his decision-making, Tyler Seguin and his age, his immaturity, whether it be the people around him, his family, his friends, whatever it is, in their estimation, they felt as though this kid was headed in the wrong path. And I think, honestly, if you asked Tyler Seguin at the time, he was headed in the wrong path. And it took till you get traded from a team that had just won the Stanley Cup, and, you know, I mean, you're not that far removed, and you get sent to another team, and the first question you have to ask yourself is why? Well, in this day and age of social media, in the day and age of judgment over how you are handling yourself publicly, because we don't always see what happens behind closed doors, in his circumstance, they weren't comfortable. And they had the ability, kind of like the Detroit Red Wings, Boston was kind of trying to follow the same template that you have to have a certain culture in your locker room, have the same culture within the entire organization, and he didn't fit. So he got thrown under the bus by someone in management, and ultimately Chiarelli has the final decision, and he has those guys and staff to help him make those decisions, but that's where it emanated from.
All right, we're talking to Aaron Ward from the NHL on TSN as Melnick in the Afternoon continues here on TSN 690. How about San Jose? The news now that Peter DeBoer has been hired, broken by our own Pierre LeBrun. What do you think of the move?
I'm still, honestly, I'm like, it's, for me, it screams dysfunctionality. Like, you could bring in Toe Blake, Punch Imlach, and Scotty Bowman to try to triple head coach that team. And I don't think it gets fixed until the idiocy between players and management ends. I mean, the idea that Doug Wilson goes into a season last year, and okay, I understand he's probably upset having been up 3-0 and losing eventually 4-3 in a series, and he feels like his team needs to be evaluated on their leadership. But to rip the A's and the C's off the jerseys of Marleau and Thornton and think in any capacity, in your estimation, that it's all just going to work itself out, it's not. It's so short-sighted, so idiotic, and so moronic to think that that's the way a franchise will function, a normal franchise. That, I mean, Wilson alienated the players, creates a tough relationship between the coach and the players because obviously the players have to go about their business and try and conform to the boundaries that have been set down, but still they're trying to work it out. I mean, the hierarchy's still there. When you still have the faces and the people putting on the jerseys, the hierarchy of leadership is still there, and it doesn't just fall upon the Couturiers and let me think who else. I mean, anybody else who's going to be a leader, Pavelski. I mean, these guys are put in a tough situation also. So until Wilson figures out his head from his you-know-what at times, I mean, this organization is not going anywhere. Pete DeBoer has a major, major issue to deal with when he gets there, and it's not an ideal one. I mean, I don't envy the idea. I mean, it's great to be working. He's got to go into an environment now and reestablish some kind of communication and some kind of culture from his standpoint that'll work. But I mean, Wilson's poisoned it, and I'm amazed, honestly. And I'm nothing against Wilson himself, but I'm like amazed that he's still there.
Me too. And just especially given exactly what you just described, what happened during the offseason and going into last year's season, I mean, it was comical at times. And it was almost like did he forget that these guys have NTCs?
Ever getting on a radio show or getting on TV and saying, well, I played, therefore I know. I don't think this applies to whether you played or you didn't. Common sense would tell you, especially Wilson, who was a former player and knows how a locker room works, that is just an absolute implosion of the foundation of a locker room to do what he did to that team.
How do you figure this last year of Marlowe and Thornton's contract go? Because they're dealing with this poisonous situation that you're talking about. I mean, Thornton clearly doesn't appreciate many of the things Doug Wilson has said, but they still want to score contracts after this contract's up, right?
Yeah, they're not going to have a problem doing that, though. I think that Thornton... I mean, ideally, they've been there a very long time, and you get comfortable as a player in a city that you enjoy. It's not a secret that Wilson's gone to both guys asking them to provide a list of teams, and they basically told them, screw off, that they're not going. That they worked it out in the contracts, and they earned the right and negotiated the right to stick around. There's a greatness of familiarity for those guys. They love it. And they'll get contracts, but I think they will remain San Jose Sharks to the last second, just despite anybody who's done them wrong in that organization.
It seems so crazy, though. Like, what if you got to think, right? They want to win a Stanley Cup before it's all said and done. No, that's it's at some point. Could that outweigh the need?
Yeah, but hey, listen, you are correct. And when it comes down to it, I mean, if someone went to Joe Thornton and said, hey, listen, we think you'd be a perfect fit in Anaheim. Oh, by the way, they're first in the West. Or, hey, we want to throw you over to New York. You're going to play with Nash and all these guys. I'm sure you'd consider it. But given the fact that the teams looking for Thornton are, I mean, kind of the 6, 7, 8s trying to put themselves up to compete with the 1, 2, and 3s in terms of standings, that's where he's looking. But he's taking into consideration his family. He's taking into consideration the fact that he likes where he's at. And this year will probably be his big year. To think, okay, I mean, really, honestly, I'll be gone 2 months, and then I'll have to take a serious look. And it might help him determine where he wants to go post-San Jose. Is the 2 months of regular season and getting into the playoffs as to where he wants to establish himself next?
We're talking Aaron Ward from the NHL on TSN. As Melnick in the afternoon, it continues here on TSN 690.
In the third period, with our season on the line, we probably played our best period of this series so far. So we wanted a chance, and we got a chance.
Alain Vigneault, after the Rangers exploded in the third period and forced a Game 7 at Madison Square Garden, where they've never lost a Game 7 before. What do you think? What's your feeling heading into Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final?
Uncertainty. I think that if you put a gun to my head and said I had to come up with a team, I couldn't. I don't understand how either series has gone in terms of predictability. Even him saying that he was impressed with the third period, part of the symptom of that was the fact that, to me, it looked like Tampa packed up and went home. Like, okay, we got to get 7. Once he got 3-1, they almost eliminated themselves from competing in that game. And it's not to say they were, you know, heartless or whatever, but something weird happened. If you watch Tampa, the idea that, I mean, Broussard gets the opportunities off the far post, like, uncontested, and they were losing coverage. And Bishop was faced with 2 New York Rangers with no defenders anywhere near him. That tells you that something's gone awry catastrophically. And I mean, Cooper can't be too happy with that one, but he's going to look at Game 6, throw that video, throw any part of that game completely out, focus on his Game 5. They're going to build off the fact that they shut out the home team in their barn, a team that's been so good, and your goalie beat one of the elite in the National Hockey League. But the New York Rangers, Tampa Lightning, Tampa Bay Lightning games every night leaves you wondering, is this going to be a 9-8 or are we going to be in a 1-0 triple overtime game?
I just can't wait. I just can't wait for Game 7. Do you think we're going to? Well, what about the other one? Do you think Chicago can hang on here with the? Well, with the amount of hockey they've played and the amount of hockey their top four specifically has played in the last 6 weeks or so?
I think because of the experience, because of the fact Chicago has won X number of cups, was it two in the last, is it the last 4 or 5 years? I should check the stats.
Four.
Come on. But, yeah, so Chicago's, it's almost a pedigree that been there, done that, that understanding of you're never really in such a chaotic situation and you can't handle it. I truly believe this is going to a Game 7, that Chicago will find a balance, a competitive balance. They'll overcome the fact that they, you know, had that quick exit. Like, it's got to be so deflating to get yourself to that position and in under a minute be out of that position in overtime. It's like the highest high and dropping down to the lowest low. So I think that Captain Sirius will get this team headed in the right direction. I think Quenneville will draw upon his coaching experiences, and I wouldn't count out Chicago as much as I would other teams.
Aaron, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to check in with you, sir.
All right, thanks, bud.